Part 1. Chapter 1. 823959, M41. The Death Glades, 20 kilometers west of Attica, Pythos. The beast opened its vast jaws, foul breath ripe with decay, hitting the catechan standing before it. Thick ropes of saliva descended from its top to bottom lip, and the remnants of a previous meal nestled between teeth, each the size of a man's fist. The scale saurian eyed the thick-set soldier before thrusting forward open-mouthed to feed. Its jaws clamped down on the proffered leaves, and with a contented snort, the herbivore consumed its meal. The catechan patted his mount on the head, but before he could feed the other five arbosaurs that served as his squad's method of transport, the commander's voice diverted his attention. "Leave them alone, Mac. If you feed them now, they'll be sluggish for hours, and I'd like to make it back to base before nightfall." There was no malice in Piet Brigston's voice, only the naked authority of a man used to commanding and being obeyed. "And get over here. I want you to take a look at this." Mac, discarding the armful of foliage he'd collected, did as he was asked without question. The commander was knelt down examining a deep mark in the mud of the jungle floor, while four slab-muscled figures in red bandanas looked on.
"What is it, chief?"
Mac said, coming over to join them. Though each man in the squad understood him perfectly, his syllables were clipped, making him sound as if he was speaking with his mouth covered. "It's a track. First clear one we've been able to make out. Can you identify it?" The commander motioned with a finger, drawing along the entire half-meter length of the deep footprint. Mac scrunched his flattened features and scrutinized it intently. Few catechans could claim intellect high enough to qualify them for a position within the administratum or departamento munitorum, but Mac's development was notably arrested. Not that it mattered to Brigston or the rest of the squad, and what he lacked in one area he more than made up for in others. Not only was Mac a one-man heavy bolter team, but in the 3 years they'd been stuck on Pythos, he taught himself to identify the native fauna from just their spoor, droppings, or bite pattern.
"Looks like a caravis, chief. Big one, too,"
Mac said after some deliberation. "You sure?" Brigston asked. Caravis were far from the biggest predators to roam Pythos, but they usually stuck to the abundant hunting grounds, deep into the Death Glades, or out on the open plains of the scorched savannah. For one to come this close to a populated area was rare, but if Mac was correct, this would be the third one in a week to get within 20 kilometres of Attica.
"Sure."
Brigston took him at his word. When the Catechan 183rd had found themselves stranded on Pythos, en route to the Maelstrom, many had scoffed at Tank Commander Piet Brigston's idea to retrain some of the men as beast riders. It didn't take long for them to come around to his way of thinking. Almost 30 chimeras and sentinels, lost beneath the swamps, and rampaging carnivores accounting for several hundred souls, will focus the mind like that. And it was at times like this that the patrols, or rather the native wildlife, were worth their weight in ration packs. Even if they didn't pacify the creature on their way back to Attica base, the perimeter guard could be doubled overnight and heavy weapons mounted in the sentry towers. The caravis wouldn't make it within 200 metres of the city.
"Come on, let's get hunting," said Kotchev,
one of the previously silent catechans, enthusiastically. His sweat-soaked bandana was tied around his forehead, and his moist, close-cropped scalp glistened in the late evening light. He was daubed from head to toe in mud, mirroring his fellow troopers, and his las rifle hung at his side. Also mirroring the other squad members, one hand rested on the weapon's butt, ready to swing it into action at the first sign of trouble. "All right, but let's not take any stupid risks. If it's steak for breakfast, then let's all be around to enjoy it," said Brigston. Though the 183rd had enough rations and equipment to last for months, and bulk freighters brought in fresh supplies every few weeks from nearby agri-worlds, unsurprisingly, most of the catechans preferred the taste of real meat. With no livestock being able to survive on Pythos, thanks to the predations of the numerous feral beasts that shared it with the ruby crystal miners and Imperium soldiery, the only time fresh meat was ever on the menu was when one of the patrols bagged one of the creatures. If Brigston and his patrol could make it back with a few slabs of caravis, none of them would have to pay for drinks for the next month. Mounting up, the six Catachans headed back towards the planetary capital, the sun slowly sinking behind them. Like most of the surface of Pythos, the landward side of Attica was made up of swamps and marshes from which sprang vast thick-trunked trees, the canopies of which sat hundreds of metres above ground level, obscuring most of the planet's harsh sunlight. Despite the blessed respite from the biting heat, temperatures below the cloud cover could still reach the limits of human tolerance, and a blanket of warm steam hung ominously above the stinking black water. Brigston and his men were ever vigilant for the predatory fauna that could emerge from the fog at any moment and devour a man whole, but the flora also posed a danger. Great tentacle-like creeper vines were a constant threat, as were the bulbous pods that grew at the base of trees, ready to explode in clouds of choking spores at the merest hint of movement. Even the swamp itself was deadly. If it wasn't the thick, viscous mud attempting to suck the unwary to their doom, it was the chemical reaction between agents in the water and the air, turning the steam to acid and dissolving anything that came into contact with it. As the Catachans slowly made their way back to Attica, along one of the known solid paths through the swamp, that was what Brigston was particularly alert for. Each member of the squad had their assigned task on the patrol. Brigston was keeping an eye out for the signs of acid steam, bark stripped from trees, bare patches of foliage. Simino was on vine duty, and every once in a while, the rookie, as he was known to the rest of the squad for his not quite 5 years of service, would be forced to loose off a shot to prevent one of the tendrils bringing down an arbosaur, much to the ire of the others, who thought the shots were scaring off their quarry. Zens was on guard for any other threatening plant life, while Mac and Fury were detailed with looking out for signs of the caravis. Kotcheff brought up the rear, alert for signs of enemy activity. Though this was ostensibly a peacetime operation, the 183rd simply waylaid and killing time until new transports could make it through the warp and relay them to their theatre of war, the words peace and time formed an oxymoron at the twilight of the 41st millennium. The enemies of the Emperor were all about, and a moment's laxity could cost them dear. Many a Catachan rested in the dirt, feeding worms, after thinking that because the regiment wasn't at war, the war would pass them by. The commanding officer of the 183rd, Colonel Death Strike, had survived for more than a decade in service to the Emperor from not thinking that way. And he drilled it into all of his commanders, who in turn instilled that same ethos in the men they led into battle. A crash in the distance brought them all to attention. At the head of their formation, Brigston raised a hand, and the other Catachans brought their beasts to a halt behind him. Those with las rifles unslung them and raised them to their shoulders, barrels aimed into the jungle, ready to shoot at the first thing to emerge from it. Mac checked the action of the heavy bolter, Pintle mounted to the saddle of his arbosaur. Seconds passed, before another crash, closer this time but still some distance off.
"It's coming from that direction,"
Zent said in a stage whisper, her half-ink, half-flesh arm pointing to the left of where they'd come to a halt. As one, six weapons all turned to point in the same direction. Through the swamp haze, the tops of plants swayed as something moved beneath them. Closer and closer it came.
"Hold your fire! Hold your fire!"
Brigston's order was barely audible over the oncoming noise. The shaking foliage was moving closer at speed. 20 meters. 15 meters. 10 meters.
"Now! Now! Open fire!"
Brigston's last three words were drowned out by a crescendo of gunshots. Concentrated fire poured into an area no more than a few meters wide, shredding anything unfortunate enough to come into the kill zone. As the barrage continued, several small saurians emerged from the undergrowth and darted straight past the mounted Catachans. Many of the tiny quadrupeds were wounded, but a steady stream of them continued out of the jungle.
"Cease fire!"
Brigston signalled, and after a few moments the message got through to the rest of his squad. They lowered their guns and looked on as the last few diminutive beasts scuttled through the legs of the arbosaurs and into the tree line behind them.
"Hatchlings!" said Simino, dismounting and moving to pick up one of the dead creatures. They won't make much of a meal on their own, but with the amount we...
Wait. What were they running from? Brixton said, interrupting the trooper. He didn't have to wait for an answer. Heralded by a bellow of sheer pain, its approach masked by the noise of the hundreds of hatchlings fleeing in terror, the Caravis loomed out of the swamp mist and decapitated Simino with a brutal swipe of its massive claw. Before the unfortunate Catachan's head had hit the ground, the beast drove forwards, toppling Fury's Arbosaur. The mount hit the floor with a thud, its neck snapping on impact, but the rider was thrown clear. He reached for the las rifle that had landed in the mud beside him and swung the weapon to bear on the Caravis. Fury squeezed the firing stud, but nothing happened. He was about to attempt again when the sky above him went dark and an enormous foot, the same one that had made the print they found earlier, hovered above him, poised to deliver a crushing blow. Heavy bolter fire rang out, followed by impact thuds. Fury recoiled as the Caravis's foot exploded, showering him in blood and gore. The beast roared again and unsteadily turned to direct its attention on the source of its pain. Readjusting his firing angle, Mac rattled off a flurry of shots into the beast's chest, opening up rents in the thing's orange-scaled flesh and bringing it to its knees. It tried to cry out again, but its scream was curtailed as Brigston, Kotcheff and Zenz concentrated their las fire at the freshly opened wounds, internal organs cooking off under the intense heat of their energy weapons. Prone and helpless, the Caravis's breathing was ragged, but even at the edge of death, its claws were still capable of inflicting the same devastating damage they'd caused to Simino. Maneuvering around the beast in a wide sweep, Brigston unsheathed the dull blade of his combat knife and positioned its tip at the soft, fleshy part with the Saurian spine attached to its skull. The commander braced himself, but just as he was about to force the blade through muscle into brain matter, he noticed the look in the beast's eye. Where he had expected to see rage and primal fury, instead, he found what could only be described as terror. Both hands on the hilt of the knife, he drove the weapon in with all of his considerable strength, and the beast breathed its last. Wary that the Caravis might be one of a breeding pair or part of a larger pack, it was several minutes before any of the Catachans spoke or lowered their weapons. Once the sound of the hatchlings had trailed off into the distance, each of them set about tasks with a resolve as dark as their knife blades. Mac and Fury rounded up the spooked Arbosaur mounts, while Kotcheff and Zenz set to work on the still-warm corpse of the Caravis. Brigston found Simino's headless body and retrieved the dead man's Night Reaper blade. After several minutes searching, he also found the detached head and recovered Simino's bandana. Tying the red strip of cloth around the hilt of the knife, Brigston placed a foot firmly on the fallen soldier's body and with several firm movements of his leg rolled the corpse into the undergrowth. What the jungle takes, the jungle keeps. Such was the Catachan way.
Chief, come and take a look at this, Zenz called, stood over the dead Caravis.
Brigston slid Simino's blade into his belt alongside his own weapon and joined the two Catachans over by the felled beast. What have you found?
Not sure. These are the wounds Mac inflicted, Zenz said, indicating where chunks of flesh had been rent from the Caravis's hide with her knife. And these are burns from our las rifles. But this...
She pointed the tip of her weapon to a blackened patch of scales across the rump. Pus oozed from between cracks in the hide, and the smell of decomposing flesh was amplified in the stifling jungle heat.
I have no idea what caused this.
Brigston crouched down for a closer look, but the oppressive scent of decay caused the battle-hardened veteran to retch and cover his mouth and nose.
Leave it.
But, Chief, Simino died bringing this thing down. It seems wrong to let it go to waste,
Kotcheff countered.
And if we take it back and feed it to the regiment, it'll kill a lot more than just Simino.
As if to reinforce the commander's point, maggots spilled from the necrotized area.
Now come on, we still have a chance to make it back before nightfall.
Mac, who by now had rounded up their Arbosaur mounts, led the beasts over, and the surviving Catachans mounted up and set off in the direction of Attica at pace. Before they'd even made it out of sight, the jungle of Pythos was feasting on the corpses they had left behind. 823959, M41, Attica Hive, Pythos. The sun was retreating behind the Olympax Mountains by the time Brigston's squad made it back to Attica. The late evening twilight bathed the Catajan base in a crimson aspect as thousands of jungle fighters checked weapons, sharpened blades, and filled packs with rations and ammo. As they rode through the high metal gates under the watchful eyes of the sentries up in their watchtowers, a few of the Catajans stopped their activity and cast hopeful glances in their direction, but upon seeing that Brigston and his squad were not dragging a Saurian carcass behind them, carried on about their business. Something struck Brigston as being odd. It was almost dark, and the base should have been getting ready for lockdown. Instead, it seemed the entire regiment were out of barracks and preparing to mobilise. A trooper he recognised bustled by, and Brigston hailed him. "Goldrick, what's going on? Have we been given orders to ship out?" The barrel-chested gunner stopped and looked up at Brigston, elevated several metres off the ground in the saddle of his beast. "Now, sir," Goldrick said, saluting briefly. "A shuttle came in just before sundown. Small thing, but armed to the teeth. Covered in Aquilas, too, and some other symbols none of us recognise." Both men looked skywards, towards the spire of the Hive City, and the now-occupied landing pad jutting awkwardly from its flank. "A bunch of bigwigs in robes disembarked, demanding to see the colonel. They've been in with him for the past few hours, but Strike immediately ordered us to battle stations." "Robes? Were they ecclesiarchy?" Brigston had encountered the ecclesiarchy before, back on Catajan, when the missionaries had arrived to reinforce the will of the emperor on what they saw as nothing more than savages. The people of Catajan were loyal servants of the Golden Throne, but they did not take fondly to having any kind of will enforced upon them, and after the first few shiploads of missionaries found adapting to life on the Death World difficult, ecclesiarchy mission ships started bypassing Catajan altogether. Not all who hailed from the planet were such reluctant devotees, and there were those in the 183rd, the colonel and many of his officers included, whose worship of the God Emperor was heartfelt and unstinting. "Don't think so. Two of them were women, so I've heard, but not battle sisters. Rumour is there's more of them on the shuttle that haven't come out yet. Some of Bautovsky's squad are guarding it and swear blind they can hear people moving about in there." The gunner looked around furtively, keen to be getting back on with his duties. "On your way, Goldrick," Brigston said, "but let me know if you hear anything else." The gunner scurried off in the direction of the hangars storing the regiment's tanks, leaving Brigston and his squad to take their mounts back to the beast pens. When they got there, somebody was waiting for the commander. Brigston dismounted and handed the reins of his arbosaur to Mac. The figure waiting by the entrance to the pens snapped off a quick salute, which Brigston returned. "Commander Brigston, the colonel has asked me to escort you to him the instant you got back in from patrol." Unlike Brigston and his squad, the newcomer wore a sleeved khaki jacket with brass buttons fastened right up to the lapel, over which rested an Aquila symbol affixed to a chain. In place of a bandana was a red beret, a brass likeness of the Catajan regimental symbol pinned to it. His grizzled features were assuaged by the smoothness of his chin, but the cuts to his cheeks suggested a man unused to shaving. "Major Thorne, the colonel really must be receiving distinguished guests to get you dressed up in ceremonial togs. You look more like a Vestroian than a Death World veteran," Brigston smirked. The older man shook his head and scowled before breaking out into a wide, toothy smile. "You don't know the half of it, Piet," he said, clasping the commander's hand and locking forearms together in a traditional tribal greeting. He glanced cautiously at the rest of Brigston's squad. "Can't say any more now. Strike will fill you in when we get up there."
"I just need a few moments, Eckhart."
Brigston motioned to the extra blade tucked into his belt. Both men stopped, smiling.
"Who is it this time?"
"Simino. Caravis came out of nowhere and took his head clean off."
Thorne nodded grimly and breathed a sigh of relief. Back on their homeworld, the Catajan maintained strong tribal traditions and structures, and this carried over to the regiments drawn from the Death World. Whereas the tribe would elect a headman,
the regiment would elect its own captains, sergeants, and other ranking officers, and entire regiments could be drawn from relatively small geographical areas. The 183rd hailed almost entirely from a tiny archipelago chain in Catachan's southern hemisphere, and as a result, many squads were made up of men related to each other. Cousin fought alongside cousin, brother alongside brother, and quite often served under an uncle or, in exceptionally rare circumstances, a grandfather. None of the men in Brigston's squad were blood relatives, but Thorne's nephew fought under his command.
"How's he doing?" Thorne said, motioning with his head in Mac's direction.
"You worry about him too much, Eckhart. He's as strong as an ox and has the heart of one, too. Show me a braver man in this regiment, and I'll show you my arse."
Thorne threw back his head and laughed, dislodging his unfamiliar beret and causing it to slip back over his bald pate.
"Go on," he said, readjusting his headwear. "Do what you need to do. I'll wait here for you."
Brigston nodded solemnly and headed for the clearing around the back of the beast pens. Hundreds of red bandanas fluttered in the warm breeze, each one tied to the hilt of a knife that had been thrust into the dry ground, constant reminders of those Catachans already claimed by Pythos. Carefully weaving his way between the memorials, Brigston found a bare patch of earth and pulled Simino's knife from where it had been sheathed at his belt. Kneeling, he stabbed down sharply and embedded the knife at a perfect vertical angle before returning to Thorne.
"Right, let's go and see what's got everybody so worked up," Brigston said,
following the Major to the base of the spire. To the few souls in the Imperium who had ever heard the name uttered, the Inquisition were nothing more than a myth, a legend of a bygone era used by mothers and fathers as a bogeyman to scare wayward children, or as a convincing lie by carousing drifters to work their way into another's bed. Many a child has gone to bed terrified that the black ships would come to claim them in the night, just as many a heart has been broken upon waking to find that the agent of the Ordos, who had shared their bed and promised them so much, had disappeared under the cover of darkness. To others, those unfortunate few, the Inquisition were quite real, and, as a force within the Imperium, highly destructive. Few who had dealings or even brief contact with the Ordos came away unscathed. At best, lives were left in tatters, or people displaced once their usefulness to an agent of the throne was at an end. At worst, it resulted in death, not only of individuals, but of entire worlds, planetary systems, and cultures. Up until 2 hours ago, Colonel Death Strike of the Catachan 183rd sat squarely in the camp of those who believed the Inquisition was a myth, the subject of conjecture and speculation by Imperial naval ratings with too much time and too big a drinks ration on their hands, or regimental lags who knew a trooper who once knew a trooper who was seconded by an inquisitorial agent. In light of what was to follow, Strike would look back and wish that it had ever remained so. But for now, his most pressing concern was that not one, but three of these myths, clad in identical crimson robes, stood in his command room and were making very real demands of him.
"It is a simple request, Colonel," said Inquisitor Mikhail Dinalt, idly pacing the room as if it were his own office, his crimson robes flowing behind him. "I need to commandeer three of your chimeras and their crews to take us deep into the jungles of Pythos and assist me and my team in the recovery of an..."
He paused, considering what to say next. The two similarly robed women accompanying him looked on impassively.
"An object."
He let the word hang there, euphemistically.
"My lord, with the greatest respect, that is a far from simple request."
Strike had faced down Catachan devils back on his homeworld and lived not only to tell the tale, but also to wear its teeth on a chain around his neck. Although he'd just become aware of their existence, he would not be cowed by the Inquisition. Dinalt rose to his full height, a few centimetres taller than the taut figure of the colonel, and moved his face so close to Strike's that the Catachan could feel the Inquisitor's breath upon his cheeks.
"If I so willed it, Colonel, I could bring your entire regiment under my command and march every single one of them out into the jungle to find that which I seek," said Dinalt.
From under her cowl, Brand smirked. Zula, who had grown to despise the woman more with each passing day, cast her a disapproving glance. Strike pulled his shoulders back and expanded his chest. What the colonel lacked in height over the Inquisitor, he made up for in girth.
And if that was your intention, you would have done it already.
Dinalt arched an eyebrow.
You work for an organization so secret that until you showed up on my shuttle pad, I thought it was as real as a 2-meter-tall ratling, a commissar with a conscience, or a Necron.
Zula looked as if she was about to say something, then thought better of it.
The last thing you want is 10,000 Catachans scarring the surface of Pythos for this object you're after,
Strike continued.
Hell, there are men standing guard outside this command center right now who have seen the three of you and still don't believe that the Inquisition is real, and I'm fairly confident that that's how you'd like things to stay.
Dinalt was visibly impressed.
I'm not being difficult over the Chimeras, I'm being prudent. I've been stuck here for 3 years, and believe me when I tell you that all the good a personnel carrier is going to do you out in those swamps is make you a nice big coffin.
Why haven't you modified them for amphibious use? Brand scoffed. Surely that would have been the first thing you should have done when you became aware of your situation. Strike overrode his first, potentially suicidal reaction before saying,
That may be how you get things done in the Inquisition, but the reality for the Imperial Guard is very different, my lady. Even if we did have the necessary parts to make those modifications, we don't have any tech priests to carry them out. And if we had the means to ship them to a forge world, we might as well head towards the Maelstrom, which is where we were going before we got waylaid here.
What happened to your tech priests? A mechanized brigade should have had Mechanicus adepts assigned to it, Zula asked.
They're dead, Strike stated plainly.
What, all of them? Zula responded.
My lady, this is a death world on a par with Catachan, and casualties among my own men have still been high. Those Imperial personnel without death world training didn't last very long. The administratum, clerks, tech priests, even the commissars, didn't make it to the end of our first year on Pythos.
An Imperial Guard regiment without commissars to instill discipline? Unheard of, Brand said incredulously.
It's more common than you think, my lady, Strike said, before adding quietly, especially with us.
I suppose that explains why their colonel is an insubordinate oaf, Brand said, turning to Dinalt.
Strike had survived the barbs of a spiker. He wasn't about to be stung by one from the blonde Inquisitor. Although our tanks have proven inoperable in the local environs, a detachment of my men have tamed some of the native Saurians and are using them as mounts. Not as fast as Chimeras, but adept at navigating the narrow paths through the Deathglades nonetheless.
There was a loud rap on the door of the command center.
Enter, Dinalt said before Strike could open his mouth.
Thorn opened the door, saluted sharply, then stood to one side to allow Brigston into the room. The commander entered and saluted the colonel, eyeing the three robed figures quizzically. Brigston seemed entirely oblivious to his haggard appearance and poor personal hygiene after a day in the saddle. Brand gagged and put the back of her hand to her mouth and nose, eliciting a smirk from Strike. Thorn closed the door behind them.
My lord, this is Commander Brigston. He leads the detachment I was telling you about, Strike said.
Brigston was about to salute, but upon hearing the word lord, was unsure whether he should bow instead. In the end, he did nothing and simply stood there.
This man can be trusted, yes? Dinalt asked. All of my men can be trusted, lord, Strike countered.
The Inquisitor addressed Brigston directly now.
These beasts you have tamed, do you have enough of them to carry the six of us?
The tank commander was momentarily confused, but remembered what Goldrick had said about there being others still on board the shuttle.
We have a few spare Arbosaurs that we've tamed, my lord, but they're tricky beasts to ride, certainly for a novice, he said to Dinald's dismay, before adding,
They are quite large creatures, though, and it would be possible to double-saddle them and have your people ride with mine. Dinalt's mood, which had been sombre and businesslike ever since he'd entered the command center, lightened.
Excellent. There's that Catachan adaptability I've heard so much about. How soon can you have the beasts ready, Commander?
I'll make sure my men are ready for you at dawn's first light.
Dinald nodded his appreciation of the colonel.
Lord Inquisitor, Strike said, causing Brigston to grow pale at the realization at who he had just been speaking with. Yes, Colonel. My men will do everything in their power to make sure you and your team make it back in one piece. Can I count on you to ensure the same for my men, Lord?
The Inquisitor shared a look with the two women before answering,
Naturally, Colonel. I will treat your men as if they were my own.
With that, he swept from the room, cape billowing behind him. The two women started to follow him out, but Brand stopped on the threshold and turned back to the colonel.
Colonel Death Strike. I take it Death is an honorific and not your given name?
Brand asked.
It is. One earned during my previous campaigns against the insurgents of Burleon 8.
Amusing, she scoffed.
I don't understand. In what way is it amusing, my lady?
The native tongue of the Burleon system is a variant of an old Franbaric dialect, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. It's spoken on the dozen core worlds and several of the outlying moons.
Then your honorific does not mean what you think it means. Strike remained calm, unsure if the woman was trying to bait him again.
No? What does it mean?
It's a portmanteau word. The day part means from, or of the, while ath means dirt. Literally translated, it means from the dirt, she said with a grin, before following Dinalt out of the command centre. Zula followed close behind her, but she too stopped and spoke to the colonel.
I'd like to say she grows on you over time, but she really doesn't.
The smile that followed was warm and genuine, and she shared it with Brigston too.
The Order Malleus is grateful to you and your men for your cooperation, Colonel, she added, before taking her leave.
Piet, you and your men go and get your heads down, but I want you all to report to me before first light so I can brief you before your mission, said Strike.
Understood, sir, Brigston said, saluting, and cut that crap out. It may impress the most holy Ordo, but it does nothing for me.
Brigston smirked and moved his hand away from his head before nodding his farewell to Thorn and heading back down to the barracks.
Would you like me to get the men to stand down from battle station, sir?
The major asked once Brigston had closed the door.
Not yet, Thorn. Keep the regiment on full alert until I order otherwise.
Strike stared out of the viewport at the rear of the command centre to where the first of Pythos's moons was beginning to rise into the black night sky.
They may claim they're here on a mission of discovery, but if only a fraction of the things I've heard about the Inquisition are true, trouble won't be far behind them.